Hello, friends and enemies, or should I say anemones, for this episode. I have a special announcement to make in this feed, and I'm really excited you joined us. What you're listening to right now is the second episode of an actual play of a new game I'm developing called Descent into Midnight. Descent into Midnight is an aquatic RPG exploring the depths of the sentient mind. In Descent into Midnight, a gifted team of psionic defenders fight mental, physical, and spiritual corruption, threatening their ecosystem, their home, and their friendships. With shared world-building, evocative playbooks and moves, and guided meditation and collaborative storytelling, Descent into Midnight is an aquatic game that is intense, emotional, and shows the wonders of the ocean. Take a listen to the second episode of our playthrough, which features the first leg of our character's journey. The next episode after this will feature more play and a debrief. You can learn more about the game at descentintomidnight.com. And while you go check out that site, I'll get straight into the show. I like this game that I have made.
It's a very good game! I wanted to ask a question about the game. In terms of, like, world building, does the game have a distinction between, like, where the line is drawn between, like, what the animals are and then what the humanoid things are? I think in terms of, like, character design, could there be a game where there was no humanoid aspect in the
So the,
like, if people play this game, they really wanted to get into, like, the world building and creating sentient sapient species that aren't humanoid and have had their, like, physiology completely changed by living in the ocean and did not have any sort of, like, humanoid appearance other than, like, how they act, and since we're human, we tend to give things humanoid mannerisms. If that makes any sense?
Yeah, no, it makes completely 100% sense, and I'm glad that you did ask this. So, yes, the way that we want to have this set up is that if you want to play, like, completely, you know, animal, not animal, because we have weird connotations with that, but, like, completely non-human people, that is 100% something that you should be able to do. Likewise, if you want to play, you know, highly anthropomorphized, you know, versions of creatures or animals, that's something that we also want to encourage. So, yeah, that's something, you know, definitely that I don't think that we have a section in our document, but I am writing down to add that.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah, I know one of the books that we were looking at for inspiration was one of the source books for Blue Planet. And they talk about, like, the psychology of, you know, like, what an uplifted dolphin would be like, or that sort of thing. And sort of what their version, at least, of that would look like. So
let's get into it here. So one of the other cool things that I love about Descent into Midnight is that we all share a sanctuary or a home. In addition to living in the same city or ecosystem or, you know, homeland, what have you, we have a special place where we can all go together. This is, you know, the nexus of our link to each other. It is, so you could call it a home base. It is our sanctuary. And part of our sanctuary is, you know, we'll define that just a little bit as we have been defining other parts of the world. But we define our sanctuary by a guided meditation. And this is going to be very quick, but we'll go through that guided meditation here together. I would like everyone to close your eyes momentarily, and I will read a little bit of a description to start us out. And then as I am done, whoever is ready with your eyes still closed, to just add a sentence or two about what you see, how your character interacts with this shared space, and get a sense of connection to the space that we are in. As we are all here in the sanctuary, we enter together. We clear our minds. Each of us feels the freedom and the embrace of the water all around us. There's just the right amount of warmth and light. Comfort and peace surround you. And so what I've started doing as the GM is establishing that this is a safe spot for our characters. Everyone here is comfortable. We are not worried about anything. This is literally our sanctuary in word and in effect. So whoever is ready can add another detail about the sanctuary.
So it is at the edge of the kelp forest, the last bastion, and it sticks up several hundred meters above the tallest kelp. And from it, you can look out and see the waving fronds moving with the current.
There are tube building worms that encrust all up and down it, and the sand grains that they use to build their tubes create these translucent patterns that you can see through sort of like windows and things. And so you can look through onto the last bastion through regular openings, but you can also, there are sections where you look at it through this different colored translucent glass window looking things that have worms occasionally moving through them.
Excellent.
There's big chunks of sea glass on the floor of the sanctuary and that have been embedded in the walls. And love we're it. Not sure who put them there, but they sure are pretty.
Ooh. So I would like for everyone to keep their eyes closed and picture themselves and their character inside this sanctuary as the kelp fronds are waving in the sun and the glint off of the glass, both embedded in the walls and the floor of the sanctuary building, but also smaller, almost glitter-like as the tube building worms scurry up and down this huge tower. You see as the kelp forest waves around you, open waters, and as the sun pours through in rays, the kelp grows. Everyone grows in our community. Small sea squirrels scurry about gathering up bits of, you know, refuse or garbage. Some of them might have small little spats over bits of sea glass that might fall off during a storm here or there. The tube worms don't really care. They build it up further. However, something is amiss today. For today is the third day of what would be the large philosophers' conference, as huge whales would normally come to our sanctuary to discuss, to exchange free ideas, to have their schools exchange ideas, materials, fostering this trade and growth of this community. They are all absent. What is in abundance today is their distress calls. And as the distress calls flow through the SOFAR channel, and as the sound echoes through the waves in the ocean, the building that you are in, your sanctuary, vibrates with that sonic energy. And you are awoken from your meditation to hear the resounding help. It's just one word, help, but it has been repeating every 30 to 40 minutes for the past 2 days. And you may now open your eyes.
Ooh.
Yeah.
And so you entered your meditation to try and reach a consensus for where to begin to address the distress call. And as you come out of your meditation, you have an opportunity to talk or share ideas to bring up a brainstorming about what might be done.
So I think Clack is going to sort of put his two front claws together across each other to form almost a flat surface and display a like little map of the area with, you know, almost like pings on a map. You know, you can see like little waves radiating from certain areas and sort of like adjusting to one area and go, okay, so this is sort of where I think maybe they are based on where the sound is. And I guess it would be hard to tell, but it would be his best guess.
I think Cool S is floating above the map, rotating their body as they consider it. And I think she asks, how fast can we get there?
That is a very good question. You would have to cross the dead sands to get there.
Yeah.
Okay.
So,
I'm a living mine. How do I move this quickly?
Is it bad that in my head I just have this picture of like calling up Mr. Ray from Little Nemo, the teacher, and just like hopping a ride?
That is really cool.
I would encourage you to lean in on your ideas in this game. And so if you like the idea of a massive sea ray being the common mode of transportation for people in this kelp forest, I love that.
Okay. I guess that would be something we would all know, right? It's like, okay, so if that's how you get around is giant rays, I guess Clack would, you know, he has a little map and just sort of brings his claws apart as he rotates. you know, and all his little legs going and sort of scuttle over to the like one big opening that isn't the sea glass or the tube worm glass. And I think he would do this thing where like uses they have little mouth thingies, right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So like you see all of them curl in and then all of a sudden sort of shoot out and there's this little spurt of water that moves. And you can see, like, this light just starts to build as it goes forward, you know, kind of like an Ursula Disney kind of deal, only with, you know, light. And so it shoots out and sort of explodes into a firework above the center of the kelp forest. And it's, like, a very particular color and pattern. And, like, maybe 30 seconds later, you just see this shadow come over. And, like, in the room, you know, you have all this glass and you've got the sun and you see this shadow sort of work its way across the room, but it's like in this weird crooked pattern as it goes across because of all the openings. And this ray just sort of like descends right in front of the opening and just comes level with it and then comes right up to it. And sort of one of the little wingtips or whatever just sort of gently like comes into the opening and like sits on top of it.
That is really good. So you see in this ray's eyes, a willingness to help you. It may not know exactly where you are wanting to go. You do know that most creatures do not like venturing into the Deadlands. It's fine for the migrating, well, I'm going to take a stance, migrating pods of the Philosopher Whales, because there is safety in numbers for them. For the three of you, plus your mode of transportation, your steed, as it were, it might be a little bit more dangerous. And you get the inkling in the back of your head that this ray might need some convincing to pass over such dangerous terrain.
Asteroid 2 is not particularly pleased with this plan.
No.
Dead sands are a bad place, so I think she's got like long flowing hair. She's pretty like mer person. You know? She's like a flying squirrel sort of in that she has those, you know, sand dollar flaps. But yeah. So I think she's like rubbing at some scarring she has, some like deep purple, because it was the purple stuff that like messed up her, the dead sands, right? So I think she's scarred from her time there. And so bits of her carapace are and external body wall are sort of scarred and jagged and otherwise marred with some dark, dark black purple stains. Mm-hmm. And so I think she's got her arms crossed and is like, is there anything we can, is there anything we can use to prepare ourselves before we wander and take this only semi-willing participant into this most dangerous of areas? What can we do to ensure their safety as well as our own?
So
she's a spoil sport.
No, it's great. It's great. I think rather than sort of a raised eyebrow, Clack sort of just lifts up one of his claws at an angle, almost like it wasn't, you know, something that, you know, like if it were a Cars movie, it would be, you know, like one of the light things coming up, you know, it's and I think what he does is, you know, he's got the shifting colors, but he puts on the like the one side of him becomes purple to sort of mirror your coloration and just sort of pushes that to one side and just sort of like lets it sort of slowly fade. And then like he goes over and he just sort of like pats the ray with one claw you see on the other claw, it starts at the tip, like a little shape that looks vaguely like a ray shooting off to one side as there's like three little dots staying near the end of the claw.
Cool.
Then he sort of goes,
"Will that be enough?" Clap? We're not an army.
Yeah, I don't know. I almost feel like having him not talk is more fun.
Yeah, I dig it. I think
communicating through vibrant images is a good good idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you communicate to your team that, correct me if I'm wrong, from my understanding, that you are planning to take the raid to the edge of the Dead Sands and then continue on your own.
Yeah.
So the Ray sees your communication, and though it may not speak, you know, the right language, the fact that you're communicating through images is more than enough to communicate exactly, you know, what you want from it. It kind of it looks towards you, and you can see that there was concern in its eyes as it understood that that Asteroid, you know, was bringing up a potential for danger. But as you communicate to your team, the stress and the worry kind of fades from its eyes. And you can see the little wing that it had outstretched to the window sort of grows a little bit stronger and bolstered in its confidence in you.
Okay. I don't know if we've really answered the question.
Yeah.
Like, how are we going to get there?
So how are we going to manage them? You know, their safety? Yeah. That was answered.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we're going to get the Ray out of there, and we'll, I guess, take on the danger ourselves, which is sort of, I guess, our job, right?
But we can't. I don't think we can guarantee in safety. I think we need to, if possible, communicate that. We don't know what's wrong. This will be a risk.
Yeah. Actually. I do have a power called Home Sweet Home, My City Now, which can reform the environment a little bit. I mean, it has mechanical effects, but the idea is that it reshapes the immediate area to sort of make it more habitable or livable or conducive to that. So I think that might be something that he'd be willing to try to at least make it so that they can get across the desert, whether or not it actually works. I mean, narratively, do we just want to say that, yeah, you can get through the zones that have been dead before? It's just they're really creepy and have just sort of nasty effects. Mm-hmm.
I'm imagining the sort of the wastelands from like The Lion King, but underwater.
Okay. Okay. So,
like Scar's territory, or you know, what Pride Rock looks like before Simba attacks it.
Right. Okay.
Cool.
Yeah. So
it's traversable. It's just spooky.
Yeah.
And potentially dangerous because we don't know what's in there now.
Okay. Yeah. So there's no guarantee that the corruption is there. It's just it was at some point. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So, Asteroid, are you? They answered half of your question of how they are going to, you know, keep the Ray safe and out of trouble. Unanswered is the part about if there is any preparations that need to be taken before reaching the Dead Sands.
Hmm. What about jellyfish spacesuits? I mean, not actual spacesuits, right? But like
enclosings.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we're actually pretty small, so you know, like huge, gigantic jellyfish probably wouldn't be too crazy of a concept. Mm-hmm. Or actually, that's one of the things a cultivator can do is do bioengineered stuff. So, what about a like compact jellyfish type creature that when you electrify it, it sort of grows in size, and you can step inside of it and use it as sort of like a hamster ball kind of deal.
Does it like mask your chemical trail sort of thing so that we wouldn't be detected, hopefully?
Yeah.
There we go. All right.
Cool. I dig that.
Yeah, it like absorbs all the crazy stuff that you're putting out.
I love the idea of that. I would love for you to tell me, Richard, how you are getting your hands on these, or you know, tell us about how you are bringing them to the rest of your friends.
Okay, so I've got a move. Yeah! And it's called It Plugs In Where? And basically you can power or create sort of bioelectric devices. In this case, it would be sort of a spacesuit-like thing made of a jellyfish, and since we're at our home base, it's cool. You know, he's got those hanging around for just such an occasion. And how does it work? So if the device requires significant power, which I think it would to run three of these, essentially, roll plus altruism. So, and that's a 13. Ooh. So I think we did it.
Yeah, very good.
Yeah. So just for the record, so if it had gone poorly, we could have that it was painful, which would mark a condition. Something was in there, would be marked corruption, or have some sort of messy feedback or something like that. But we nailed it. So we have ourselves some awesome jellyfish-like containment suits.
Yeah. So, Asteroy, as you ask if there's anything, you know, that we can use for preparation, I like to imagine Clack is just like, oh, yes, and scurries over to like an armoire or something.
Well, I think he like goes over to like a bivalve.
Yeah.
And just sort of like goes and like tickles one side of it, one side of the hinge with one claw. It sort of like opens up, and instead of pearls, there's like a whole set of these just like little round balls in there. And so it just goes and plucks a couple and brings them over.
Cool. S, how are you doing with this whole situation?
Nervous.
Tell me a little bit about that. Very nervous.
First off, I've got spines all over me. I'm a little concerned about these jellyfish suits. But I also, I'm not confident that we can do this, that we can help these gigantic beings. I mean, we don't know what's wrong, but I don't have a good feeling about this.
As you step onto the ray, and as it starts moving and sort of like flying over this kelp forest, the vegetation sort of thins out, and you're not getting to the Dead Sands yet, but you're still, you're leaving your city behind. Mm-hmm. Do you voice your concerns on the travels?
I think I do. I think I say, we don't know what we're up against. We might not come back.
I strongly urge us not to resort to physical aggression first. I think we are only three, and while we are mighty, I think going slowly, as much as we may be tempted to face this head on, might be the safer course of action. I'm wary of making the situation worse, both for ourselves and the honored pods. I took a stance.
Asterisk, yes. I took a stance.
I think Clack is going to sort of just do the like the dip of the claws. Which is a nod and then a clack. Nice.
So as you get closer to the Dead Sands, you can feel it sort of in your connection to each other. So you're normally all very confident, composed, and sure of yourselves when standing side by side with your friends. As you reach the Dead Sands, that communication sort of pulls back into your head. It feels like if you are, you know, looking at really anything, but then through a migraine, as if you can feel the nerves kind of tighten behind your eyes. So you still have that connection, and you still have that feeling, you still have that sensation, but it's a pained sensation. And the ray gets more and more skittish, and its movements become more and more erratic. And so if you have to change course to get through, you know, underneath a rocky outcropping or between, you know, two towers of coral, it has a little bit of a, not manipulated, but affected response time to that. And eventually it just stops and floats down to the sand. And you can see that while the corruption is gone and you are not in immediate danger from stepping on the sand, it has a slightly purple tinge to it. Mm-hmm. The booming, resounding help rings out through the ocean. And as it does, the vibrations, because it is so much closer here, ripple through the sand and the rock that you're on. And, you know, I imagine if you're underneath like a large rocky arch, some sand drifts down from that.
So I think Clack is going to like slowly reach out with each claw and just sort of like tap each of you and then start scuttling sort of down one side and then hop off onto the sand.
I think Asteroid jumps as you touch her, and then she, you know, clears her head again and starts to leaps off of the manta and sort of glides down gently.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you've ever seen Cool S move so quickly. the feeling, the sensation of becoming like isolated from you two was a little scary. And she's like right behind both of you. Moving very fast, those little 2 feet going very quickly. A little, like, visible trail of water as the tube is pumping. Yeah,
that's so good.
That is good.
Awesome. I think Clack is at that point going to sort of create, like, a little, maybe like a 1-inch long sort of, like, minnow kind of deal that's, like, a super bright color.
Okay.
And then have it sort of go up and shoot off back the way we came as kind of a... Like, I would guess that's something that a lot of people can do. Like, it's just a minor thing that people can do with psionics, and that's how you sort of tell the rays where to go.
Mm-hmm.
So before we called it, now it's kind of the, okay, get out of here.
Yeah. It does not even wait for your signal to dissipate in the waters. It is lifting itself up and leaving you. And you are left suddenly alone and very quiet. The booming help finishes echoing across the rocky landscape, and you are now left with a literal desert of the sensations. So the only thing in view is the dead sands, which stretch on and on.
You said that their call was sort of like disturbing the sand. Is the sand now like rest? Is it like resting in a pattern where you can like follow the trail of where the sound was coming from?
Ooh,
that is a really good question. We don't necessarily have a really good grasp on an assess mechanic right now.
Yeah.
And I think that this is a good chance to playstorm it.
Oh, sweet. So
it sounds like you're taking a look at what is around you.
Yeah. Maybe since you already established it, it just seems to be like an empty desert, specifically looking for anything like at a pattern, a trail.
Yeah.
Left behind by this pod.
If you could describe your actions in one of five adjectives, would it be?
No, I like that. I can imagine you being like driven to do it. You're like, I have to get this mission done. Versus like, I'm trying to understand how other people would have like trying to like put myself in their shoes. Like,
can I do community? As in, I'm trying to in this kind of trying to.
Connection.
I'm a little spooked. I want to get both of yours help. Yeah. I don't want to do this alone.
Ooh.
Oh, okay. I like that. That's cute.
I think there might have been a moment where I was like puttering a little bit ahead, trying to look around, and then I like putter back and say, "Do you all see anything?"
I think Asteroid feels like really included and like it's like a little moved because like I think she views herself as very scary and terrifying and like. You're just kind of sensitive about that sort of thing. So to be asked to, like, help out, she's like, oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's very special. So, yeah, I dive into it.
Yeah. Cool S, I would love for you to roll with community for this assess move.
Heck yeah. Oh, I don't have a great community score.
It's not the best.
Oh, it's 10, actually.
Hey, there you go. So... I think one of the options that we can put here, and so this is the benefit of recording this playtest, is that I can write this down later, is that you find what you're looking for is one of the options that we will have for choice.
Yeah.
If you could think of anything else that might happen from an unmitigated success of, you know, acting as a team and searching for something, other than finding what you're looking for, what would that be?
Ooh.
I could imagine something like clearing certain kinds of conditions. You know, if you're feeling isolated, the people who helped you could start to remove that. Maybe something less crunchy that you could do too, though.
We could just say plus one forward to acting on your results.
Oh, that's true.
Do you want to do that for simplicity's sake, or do you have something?
Yeah. No, I like that. That seems like the most actionable.
Okay.
At least for now.
You find an indication of where the whale song is coming from. Do you have an idea of what that looks like?
I think it might just be a trail. I'm thinking specifically of a trail that you would see behind like one of those moving rocks in the desert.
Okay.
I don't know why. Nice.
Yeah.
But that's like the image popping in my head, like their sound was so like concentrated that it just like blasted a clear path or a clear like the sand is ribbed in this one way in this direction. Maybe not like in like an inch wide line, but like
yeah.
As we're looking on the horizon, we can clearly see where like the natural like settling of the sand is different in one direction.
Yeah. I have an idea of an image for this, and I'm going to pitch it to you here. That as you're looking around with Asteroy, the help booms through again, and you notice as Asteroy is looking that the sonic vibrations are tipping over a boulder that might crush both of you. And so, ooh, because your result was so, you know, was well, it was a 10 plus. You're able to, you know, avoid the danger of this rock as it topples over. And then you see, as it's toppled, it has been doing this for a while. And you can see the imprint in the sand that it left. Uh-huh.
We have our heading. But are you okay? Asteroid, are you okay?
Is that boulder maybe one of, like, the buildings of the city that had been there before? It's, like, super weathered, but, like...
Oh, I wasn't planning on it, but I love that. So yes.
So I think I get saved by you, which is great, and then I see the heartbreaking, like, this is, oh, this used to be,
oh,
something. So so I think Asteroid like reaches out and touches it, and she's like, I'll be okay. Let's keep moving.
You say you'll be okay, but I can imagine that this might be something that would be a little traumatic. So I would love for you to roll Endure. Now, Endure is when you endure trauma, roll plus the amount of conditions that you have marked. So right now it's zero.
I rolled it. Jeez. Boxcars? Is that what you call double sixes?
Oh. Oh, boy. You want to roll on Endure.
Yeah.
So on a 10 plus, it takes its toll, and you are incapacitated for the remainder of this scene.
Rolling high is bad? Oh, because it's plus two conditions.
Yeah.
Well, that's gonna get me.
Yeah, so you, I think that you are kind of,
you're I'm shattered.
Out. Yeah. Talk to us a little bit about why it takes both of your teammates to carry you into the dead sands.
Interesting. So I like pass out, or
that I think that's up to you. Incapacitated, it can mean passed out, so you might just faint and fall unconscious. You might just be unable to move of your own volition. You know,
are you just like incapacitated by grief?
I was thinking it might have something to do with like my Aristotle's lantern. So I'm wondering if it like I got spooked. I see. I'm like basically I have a flashback to like the last days of the place that I used to live. And so like as I'm seeing the boulder sort of falling and it's not falling on us, but I see the boulder fall and that's sort of superimposed with all the like, you know, the last days of this city when people were, you know, running away and you know, the corruption was just spreading too far. And so yeah, I think I like self-defense sort of mode fire up. Like basically I panic. And so I think like the chitinous aperture sort of shrinks open. And everything like gets started like broiling over, and the two of you are sort of like, chill out, everything's okay. Yeah. And so I'm trying to like, you know, remain lucid and seeing you guys, and basically, I don't know, maybe I, gosh, how can I shut it down in a way that incapacitates me for the next scene? Maybe I'm about to like sort of fire off this like weird, you know, thing of energy that would be you know, theoretically. You know, it's a self-defense action, but basically I'm trying to shut down this like attack that I'm functionally releasing.
Oh,
and so what I do is just I shut it, and so it sort of internally like goes off, which is not good. Does that seem reasonable?
That
like knocks me out.
Yeah, that is incredible.
Yeah,
I love that.
Oh wow.
As like a really dramatic response to this.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
I rolled a 12, I guess.
Yeah. Wow.
I feel like there's got to be, like, you know, sort of a light that's, like, still, like, emitting or whatever, and you can just see, like, the
cracks in my carapace.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you can see it just kind of, like, trying to, to shoot out.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so the two of you...
I was going to say, have we ever seen anything like that?
Ooh, have I frightened you?
That kind of sounds... Yeah, that would be...
This is, like, Asteroid's worst day.
Yeah.
Because so, I gain corruption when I frighten you.
Yeah.
Ooh. Okay.
So if you think that I have, then I get...
I think Clack just sort of, like, disappears into the sand and just, like, burrows in. And a couple of seconds later, you just sort of see, like, the clawing back up out of it, but he's covered in, like, the deeper you go in the sand, the more purple it is.
Yeah.
Cool, yeah.
And so he comes up, and you just see this image of that same side of him that he had turned purple before to match Astroy back in the sanctuary. Aww. Is there... And you see it just sort of like slowly drifting away, but there's still like a good portion of it still sitting on him.
Aww.
And he just sort of looks over at Gulas and it's just, you know, does the just sort of like the claws just sort of like come down and just sit on the floor, the seabed.
I think Kulas actually like silently drifts over to Astroy and is like was panicked at first because oh my gosh, my friend. But I think as a living weapon, seeing that others struggle with like potentially doing violence, whether or not it's of their own accord, it's weirdly
unifying or
unifying, and I think Kulas is just kind of like drifting between both of you, just saying it's okay, it's okay.
So great.
Let's keep going.
Yeah. So the two of you carry Astroy into the dead sands, and it goes on for a long time as you follow the craters left by this boulder. As you start to go, it's just the roll marks as it's been like toppling and toppling. But as you keep going, those roll marks are more and more spread out as if the booming sonic energy of the help is lifting it and pushing it. Mm-hmm. And you feel this effect once as you get close enough to the whales, where you can see their shapes darkly in the water ahead. And the loud shout of help just shudders through the ocean waves and sort of pushes you all back hundreds of feet in its force. So you're able to make progress maybe, you know, half an hour to an hour. So the boom of the help may only hit once or twice. And you can clearly make up the progress, but it does get stronger and stronger as you approach. And once you finally do approach, Astroy, your energy has calmed, and I would like you to mark a condition. But come back to the scene with us.
Okay.
How are we carrying Astroy?
I like to think that it's on Clack's back.
Uh-huh.
And, like, he's just got his claws out and kind of, like, the to where her arms are. Mm-hmm. And so it's basically, like, he's just walking along and it just looks like her just lying, you know, just lying back, you know, like on a pool floaty or something and just walking along the sand.
I think Kulas has been like a foot or two ahead, like buffering incoming like helps, so it doesn't push you back too far or like toss Astroy off accidentally.
So you make it through the dead sands to where you are going, and as the dark masses in the water sort of clarify and become more visible. You see a terrifying sight, which it does prompt multiple and intense calls for help. You see three of the philosopher whales and their schools surrounded by a purple cloud. And as the cloud shifts and waves in the ocean waters, you can tell that it is determined but imperceptibly getting smaller and more constricted. Lying on the bottom of the ocean are a couple of incapacitated purple bodies. And more scary than that are the sea squirrels, which lived in their natural habitat with their translucent ooze and their little oxygen appendages sticking out from their encrusted exoskeleton, their found exoskeletons, that their bodies have turned purple.
Oh, jeez.
And they pick up bits of the surrounding area and move them in random patterns. So picking things up, moving them in different areas, setting them down. This corruption is causing complete and utter chaos in this environment. And the thought was that the philosopher whales may get through the dead sands with strength of numbers, but this corruption seems to have decided to go against that and is weeding them out and reducing those numbers. And as you get closer, the booming call for help ripples out from one of the whales, and the cloud of corruption pulses back and starts again to shrink.
Oh, nice.
When you said the ones that are incapacitated on the ground, are they like completely enveloped in the purple algae?
Yeah, yep. Mm-hmm. So you can see them breathe. They are still alive.
Oh, okay.
But they are completely encapsulated by this purple algae.
Oh, gosh.
What do you do?
I want to vow revenge for this heinous wrongdoing.
Absolutely, you should do that. Tell me what that looks like.
Has Asteroi gotten up yet?
Yeah, I think she's kind of dead-eyed, though. I took the condition apathy, if that sounds good. Like, okay. I'm not quite despairing. I'm just, like, I just feel like... this is the worst case scenario, and how can we affect this? So I'm just glazed over, a little emotionless at the moment.
Normally, do you rely on your friends for a sense of drive or purpose? Do they, you know, encourage you a lot? Because I could also see that working into the deadening of your psychic link, of not feeling the support that you would have.
Oh yeah, definitely. That sounds totally appropriate. You know, I really need that connection. To mm-hmm. get by. And now it's slipping through my fingers.
Yeah. Good choice. I like that. So, yes, Cool S.
I think Cool S kind of rotates as they're thinking, all five of their limbs just, like, rotating. And then I think they don't really, she doesn't really have a face, but she does also have a smaller what is it called again? The Aristotle...
Aristotle's Lantern. Yeah, your little mouth part.
Yeah, little mouth part. But it's pretty tiny. And I think when that's facing you, that's when you know, like, she's addressing you.
Attention. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think we're going to fix this together.
How? I'm a jerk. there's a team move I have. Why don't I feel like it's an appropriate moment. So I think I look at you and, you know, you're trying to like bolster us and explain, mm-hmm. you know, we're going to do this, we're going to fix mm-hmm. it. And I'm going to confess, one of my deepest fears to you. I'm not just worried that we'll fail here. I'm worried we think we'll succeed and we'll bring whatever this is back home. What are we going to do to make sure that doesn't happen? How could we possibly stop that from happening? For the listeners, when I tell someone a fear that I hold, ask how they would help you face it. If they have a plan, you both clear a condition. If they shirk from your request, mark an XP, but mark corruption. It's okay if we don't have a plan. We can keep moving on and just like take it by
the moment. Fantastic.
But I confess this fear, and I'm losing a little bit of myself every moment. I can't address it.
That's so
I ruined this poor character. I'm sorry.
No, this is great.
It's awesome.
Working as intended, honestly.
Whew.
Oh, that's really good.
You may not need a concrete plan.
Very true. Just something, or... If you don't want to deal with my fear, because, like, you need to go, like, solve this problem right now, that is very legit.
Oh, my gosh. Well, you know, oh, gosh.
You don't have to. That may be a bad use of your time to sit here and comfort me with your plans.
Well, and Cool S, you were beginning to trigger a living weapon move. If you're looking for something, I would encourage you to think about how you can combine the greatest fear with Hell's Heart.
Mm.
Which, if you would like to read out for the listeners what... Hell's Heart.
Oh, yeah. Hell's Heart, when you vow revenge for a heinous wrongdoing, tell the GM what you are prepared to do in pursuit of vengeance and choose one consequence you are prepared to accept because of your obsession. And I think it's dangerous odds. This is just so overwhelming. But there's tunnel vision, collateral damage, dangerous odds, a nefarious antagonist, compromise your morals, and then whenever you act in accordance with both your vow and engage the consequence, take +1 forward. I think Cool S considers this because this is just, that's really upsetting. And then floats a little closer to Asteroid and says, if we have to stay here forever, at least we won't be alone. We'll have each other.
Ooh, that's really good.
Yeah.
Aw. And I think as she, you know, as your character comes closer, like, you know, it strengthens the sort of psychic link that we're having. Maybe, I don't know if proximity helps, but, or at least I feel that it's strengthened, even if it's in my mind. I remember that not all is lost. That's awesome.
Thank you so much for listening. I hope you're interested in Descent into Midnight. If so, you can sign up to receive email updates about the production, check out some of the awesome concept art we have, and learn a little bit more about how the game plays, all at descentintomidnight.com. You can also follow the game on Twitter at DIMRPG. Please keep an eye out for one more episode on this feed, continuing play with this group. And please, please, especially for these episodes, we want as many eyes as we can have on this production. So remember to share and enjoy.